how much of this is about the citizenry having unrealistic expectations with regards to change? How much of this is about people in 2008 hearing it over and over, think, okay, well, maybe this is the guy that can dramatically change Washington, D.C.? How much of it is about that?
I think that, you know, usually you try to buy low and sell high.
Yeah.
And yes, Barack Obama was a special politician who ran on a really big platform of change and people got excited about it. But also, I think when you look at what both candidates talk about in this election, Obama and Romney make it sound like electing them will have this catalyzing effect on Washington. But if you don't deal with the fundamental reforms like what I mentioned in the Congress or how we fund elections, yeah, it's hard to do that.
One of the things I like that you, well, I liked a lot of what you said, but one of the things in particular, about how it's unrealistic to expect people who benefit from a system to work to change the system. It's wholly unrealistic. Let's go ahead now. I want to bring in some other folks and continue this discussion. Perry Bacon is back, of course. Perry, the political editor for The Griot, also an MSNBC contributor. And Matt Welch, editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine. Matt, really good to see you on a Saturday afternoon as well. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Perry, I want to start with you. We heard President Obama say that he needs the American people to put more pressure on Congress to get things done. Does this mean more grassroots types of events, or what's he talking about here?
I agree with what Ari said. I'm not at times exactly sure what he's talking about. I mean, grassroots help does influence politics. That said, one of the things that the misnomer here is Washington has accomplished a lot under Obama's term. Obama had the most accomplished first 2 years since Lyndon Johnson, the health care bill, the stimulus bill, big education reform. It's not as if nothing has happened the past 2 years, and a lot of the changes that have to happen do have to happen in Washington, with the president and other people convincing members of Congress to vote for things that maybe aren't very popular. When the health care bill passed, it was not supported by the majority of Americans, and Obama, along with Nancy Pelosi, kind of had almost pushed them there to pass that bill.
Matt, by now, a lot of folks have been talking about this, the alleged GOP plan that Robert Draper wrote about in his book, that on the night of the president's inauguration, top Republican leaders and strategists, they huddled, they ate some steak, they drank some red wine, and they plotted to block anything that President Obama tried to get through. Why aren't Democrats out there every day telling voters that Republicans are more concerned with this president's failures than with their constituents' successes?
Aren't they out there every day saying that?
Every third or fourth day.
The Democratic convention, and that that message was not lost of people watching there. No, I mean, it's to complain about the procedures of obstruction in the system that was set up. It was built to create obstruction, to create people challenging for power. It's ultimately pretty unsatisfying for voters. And let's not forget the context of Obama's comments, which is an interview with Univision in which he was trying to explain under very good and sharp questioning, hey, what happened to that whole immigration reform thing? And so he sort of changed the subject to, oh, we need to change more from the outside, when in fact, at the time, he had, and the Democrats had, pretty strong control of what was happening in Washington. So people use sort of the outside-inside game opportunistically, depending on where they need to position themselves at any given point. I think what's really interesting right now is that there are a lot of groups, I think right now more on the right than the left, who are trying to change not just Washington, but their own parties' behavior in ways that are more copacetic to them, like the Tea Party, like Club for Growth, some of these groups. And it'll be interesting to see whether grassroots group on the left take Obama up on it and push him in directions that they want to go on things like the drug war.
Or what were you about to say?
I was going to say, you know, if you listen to what Matt just said, you might have the impression that Democrats just slept on immigration reform and the DREAM Act. It actually dovetails with what we're talking about, because there was a filibuster against the DREAM Act, which had a majority of support in the Senate. So part of the problem is sheer boredom. You get into this and you start using these words like filibuster and cloture, and a lot of voters may tune out. But I think if someone was listening to Matt, they might have the misimpression that somehow Obama was being pressed on something that the Democrats didn't try to do. In fact, they were thwarted from it.
Comprehensive immigration reform.
Break here, Matt. And Matt, when we come back, I want to pick up something that you said, pick up where you left off, about the future of both parties. We heard from Michael Smirkanish earlier about what will happen to the GOP if Romney loses. I want to talk to you about what will happen to the Democratic Party if Barack Obama loses. That and Romney's week. It was a bad one. We'll talk specifically about where the campaign went wrong, what they need to do to get back on track. MSNBC, the place for politics. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. We call them the Brain Trust. Perry Bacon from The Griot, Matt Welch, Reason Magazine, and The Nation's Ari Melba. We're not overselling that. You guys, I mean, you guys are brilliant. Matt, we'll start with you. You wrote a piece calling out Governor Romney and Republicans for making the false link between those paying no taxes and voting Democrat. We know that's false to the extent that they claim, yet conservatives defend Romney, RNC Chairman Arinz Priebus, Congressman Alan West, as well as some in the conservative media as well. Where have they gone wrong, Matt?
I think the biggest problem, besides of just kind of inaccuracy of it, is that there's a sort of a nasty streak of economic determinism in there, saying that how much income taxes or how much income that you make will determine who you vote for. That's just not true, and it's also not the message that they were spreading at the Republican National Convention, where every single day they were talking about, well, my grandmother came here and worked really hard and then improved her life, in our family's life. We were able to move upward on the scale. You change. You don't get locked in the same place forever. So there's an economic determinism there, which is very unseemly and off-putting. And it also elides a pretty important point, the point that I guess he was trying to make, is that it's difficult to change entitlements and government goodies if a lot of people are receiving them. Sure. Well, this is a true point, but it's not a Democratic or Republican point. It's bipartisan. You know, Medicare is one of the biggest programs in the world, in the United States, and it's received by people who vote Republican. So there's no partisan virtue one side or the other on the question of receiving government benefits.
Perry, the Romney campaign and Republicans have accused the president. They've been doing it for some years now, accusing him of class warfare. Is that line of attack, is it now off the table given Romney's remarks and the GOP's defense of those remarks?
No. I mean, you heard Romney in the days after the comment, instead of apologizing for it, kind of doubling down on it and saying, you know, I think you're going to hear more in the debates about Romney won't call Obama the food stamp president, but he'll get close to doing that. This kind of class warfare argument from the Republican side about the notion that Americans don't pay income taxes is something that's not just Mitt Romney's view. Paul Ryan's talked about that. Scott Walker's sure. talked about that. He's going to come back to this issue, and it'll be interesting to see how Obama really contrasted and makes clear that we're all in this together, we're all paying taxes, we all pay payroll taxes. That's what the next part of this argument will be.
I want to, I'm very fascinated, Ari Melba, with campaign ads, have been since I was a little boy, and I asked you guys to send in your favorite so far this season, and I want to start with yours, and we're going to play a snippet of the ad, and then we'll talk about it on the other side. I want you to tell me why you like this one in particular so much. Take a look. This is Ari Melba's favorite campaign ad of 2012.
Romney has only released 2 years of tax returns, both from after he started running for president. He's still failing to match the precedent set by other presidential.
That wasn't you. Whose ad was that? Which ad was that? Okay. Which ad is yours? Give us.
I'll tell you. My favorite was the basically Newt Gingrich super PAC supporting.
Okay,
ad.
We have that.
Do we have that?
Yeah. Let's cue it up.
Mitt Romney became CEO of Bain Capital the day the company was formed. His mission: to reap massive rewards for himself and his investors.
Mitt Romney, them guys, they don't care who I am.
He's for small businesses. No, he isn't. He's not.
There have been so many you almost forget. That's from the Winning Our Future Super PAC.
Exactly.
That was effective.
Devastating. And what's so amazing about it is that ad from these conservatives supporting Newt Gingrich's candidacy looks exactly like the president's criticism and attack ads against Bain and against Mitt Romney, which just shows you where we are at. You know, we look at so many things through a partisan lens, but the truth is there's so many larger economic realities in this race, and people who are concerned about jobs and unemployment have a very negative view of what Bain and these companies did, and that's bipartisan.
And that's a view that was shaped first by Republicans in the primary battle. Perry Bacon, what's your favorite?
The Ron Paul ad.
The Ron Paul ad. Let's cue it up and play it and talk about it on the other side. Perry Bacon's favorite ad of 2012.
What's up with these sorry politicians? Lots of bark, but when it's showtime, whimpering like little shih tzus. You want big cuts. Ron Paul's been screaming it for years. Budget crisis? No problem. Cut $1 trillion year one. That's trillion with a T. Department of Education? Gone. Interior, Energy, HUD, Commerce? Gone. Later, bureaucrats. That's how Ron Paul rolls.
I forgot about that one. That was pretty good, too. Why did you like it so much?
I like it because it's interesting. I mean, most ads are so dull. You know, someone speaks in the camera and says nothing interesting. That's very compelling. But the problem, the reason you don't see ads like that is, and one problem with what the Republicans are telling Romney is, a lot of Republicans are saying to Romney, be more specific, be more detailed. There's a reason Romney's not being more detailed. He's for a lot of the same cuts in the budget that Ron Paul is for. And the problem is, those are not very popular. I mean, I like ads that are specific as a journalist. The problem with that kind of ad is, and the problem with the cuts Romney's proposing are, most voters don't support them. And that's why when Scott Walker will be on tomorrow saying Romney needs to talk about how he needs to reform the government more, yeah, Romney doesn't want to talk about the details because the details are not popular that he's offering.
No one wants to hear any talk about the mortgage interest deduction tax even being examined as possibly being taken off the table. Matt Welch, really quickly, which one's yours?
I'd like to be libertarian with me just this once by Gary Johnson.
Let's take a look at this obscure one. Take a look.
We the people will never agree on the small things, but let's agree on the big thing. Our leaders have blown it. I ask you to join me in trying something that's never been attempted before in America. Let's put our parties and our differences aside one time. Be libertarian with me for one election.
I never saw that. That's a good ad.
Especially the way that the vocals or the words don't exactly link up. It reminds me of a Darren Aronofsky movie like Pi, so the production values of it. I like it because it's kind of funny and it's a little bit conspiratorial if you watch the whole thing on YouTube. I also like Gary Johnson and the sort
of
vibe of the ad is not really like he is in person, which I find kind of humorous. But it's also an interesting notion. Just for this one election, okay? We can stop for the rest of the elections, but just one time, try a different way than you get the two parties end up governing in similar ways once they're in power. It's an interesting critique.
All right, stand by, Matt, 1 second. When we come back on the other side of this break, you're going to tell us what happens if Democrats lose in November. We'll get a sneak peek at the political week ahead in Washington. Perry Bacon is going to tell us, I'm going to tell you about some breaking news, sort of, out of Wisconsin, kind of what the Obama campaign is saying. And Perry's going to decipher it after this. A lot of promises in a little bit of time. Welcome back. Live look, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. President Obama set to take the stage there at about 6:30 local time. And we just got a little tidbit here from a senior campaign official, Perry Bacon. I want to get your take on this. The Obama campaign admitting that Wisconsin is the only state where they have been able to see the GOP ground game in action, referencing the Walker recall there. This particular official says that Mitt Romney is much stronger in that state than John McCain ever was. Do you think that the Obama campaign is just blowing smoke, or do you think they're legitimately concerned, Perry Bacon?
I think they should always be concerned. I'll tell you, 4 years ago, they were concerned too. Ari and I actually were on the plane with Obama 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago to this date, going out to Wisconsin with the president. I don't think he ever returned, though, because he won the state overwhelmingly. Wisconsin is actually hasn't voted for Republicans since 1984. So my sense is if Obama loses Wisconsin, he'll have also lost Virginia, Ohio, and the election. It's just hard to see Romney stronger in Wisconsin because of Paul Ryan than 4 years ago, but it's very hard to see the path to winning that state for Romney.
Yeah, just to jump in, I mean, I agree with Perry. It is a state that should go Democratic. I think what we're seeing to what Craig is reporting is the Obama campaign does not want people on the ground there or the national media to think of this as a firmly blue state and then get a backlash as the race tightens. And to the point about the Walker recall, there are a bunch of conservative-leaning activists who've just been on the ground working hard in that state and victoriously. So it is a completely different model than other places where a little lead will gel. This can tighten.
Matt Welch, really quickly, I want to get your take on something you said a few moments ago. If the Democrats lose this thing in November, and again, we should point out at this point that every poll that we've seen over the past 7 days indicates that that is not likely, but if it does happen, what happens to the Democratic Party, Matt Welch?
It depends on how they lose. I think that the overwhelming response would be, and I agree that they probably won't lose, but would be to blame Citizens United for putting money in politics. I think there will be some blame of racism or voter suppression. I don't think there's going to be a long kind of navel-gazing that you saw in the wake of 2004 after John Kerry lost. The party really had more of a gut check back then. But if he loses because, for instance, marijuana legalization is on the ballot in Colorado and it wins, and those people vote for Gary Johnson, not Obama. Granted, this is all pretty far-fetched. If something like that happens, then they might start paying attention to areas among their base.
So glad we got pot in there.
You're giving Gary Johnson more airtime today than he's gotten in the past 3 weeks, 3 months, I should say, if not 3 years. Matt Welch, thanks. And before we go, I want to Matt, Ari, Perry Bacon as well down in D.C., appreciate you spending so much time. I want to ruin the magic of television here. Matt Welch, right across the studio. We just didn't have room for him at the desk. Ari Melber said that you've got to work your way over. You've got to earn this.
But the kids' table, that's fine. I understand.
That does it for me this afternoon. We'll see you back here tomorrow.